Today was the fourth annual On the Table Forum. It's a day-long series of conversations hosted by Chicago area residents. Participants meet in homes, restaurants, museums. They talk about the issues facing their communities. They bounce around ideas. They strengthen relationships. On the Table is created by Chicago Community Trust, which is hoping to elevate civic conversation. We thought, since we have the big table 8 o'clock every night here on the download, why not open it up tonight to have our own On the Table? Joining me in studio to talk Chicago community and what we can do to make Chicago work for everyone, Daniel Ash. He's a chief marketing officer for the Chicago Community Trust. Good to see you, Daniel. Thanks for being here.
Good to see you. Thank you.
Sol Flores is the executive director of La Casa Norte. Sol, thanks for being here. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
And Otis Monroe is the CEO of the Monroe Foundation. He's also in studio. Otis, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So first, Daniel, let's get the business out of the door. This is a big day for you. You've probably been up since the crack of dawn, going different places. Tell about, we had you on the show last year and the year before talking about On the Table, Chicago Community Trust. How has it been today?
It's been a wonderful day. I the best way to explain it, it feels like election day, but it feels like the candidate was the city of Chicago. Right? The residents were electing themselves to sort of civic participation. And from early this morning to just moments ago, like thousands of conversations about community. And they were conversations that were dictated, directed, controlled by everyday people. And that's extremely powerful, yeah. And quite frankly, what our city needs.
Okay, so tell us about, I mean, how successful was it? How many people were involved, things like that?
So here's where we know. We, across the region, and when I say region, we're talking about multiple the counties, we had 5,800 sort of table conversations.
Wow.
And for listeners, I want them to understand that these are groups of 10, 12 folks sitting around a table, sharing a meal, and having a conversation about an issue that they care about. So again, 5,800 is what we're estimating right now. We feel that we've reached through social media, through all of our engagement efforts, 100,000 Chicagoans.
Wow.
What I've experienced today is sort of twofold. One, people have a deep hunger for participation instead of civic life. The narrative is often that, well, folks don't care. They want to just watch TV, listen to the pundits, and they're sort of disconnected. Right now, we're at a stage where folks want to kind of reclaim the city.
They want to engage, right?
Yeah, it was one young man. I mean, I say young man, I'm like a 20-year-old organizer. And he made the point about it's like the state and community. And then he came and said, well, the community is the state, right? We have the power to control sort of the destiny of our neighborhoods. And so this idea that our voice matters, and mm-hmm. if we listen generously to one another, we'll develop relationships. If we develop relationships, then we can do things together.
So why did you get involved in this? Because you're on the steering committee as well, and of course with La Casa Norte. What is it about On the Table and the Chicago Community Trust initiative here that got you involved?
Yeah, I think, you know, Daniel's point about it's an opportunity to engage folks who normally don't see themselves participating in the conversation. A couple years ago, the conversation centered around the word philanthropy and what does that mean to you? And that's such a big 27, you know, letter word. And we broke it down to say everyone can be a philanthropist. So for me, I've obviously devoted my professional and personal life to community development, and I work in community and I'm constantly talking to community. But this is a way to engage all those other stakeholders and people around who aren't doing it on a 9-to-5 basis, but who want a way to enter with grace, with non-judgment, with maybe, I don't know what's going on. I'm not that versed in education or housing or police safety. I just know I feel bad when I listen to the news, or I want my kids to feel safe walking down the street, or I have empathy for yeah. what's happening in this part. So I got involved and have been a part of the steering committee so that we can make sure lots of different diverse voices are also involved.
Yeah, that's a great question. How do you get people involved? Let's turn to Otis. You know, Otis Monroe, you're on the steering committee as well. What is it about On the Table that brought you here? And also, you know, how do you get diverse voices involved in something like this?
Well, for the Monroe Foundation, we became involved because we felt it was an opportunity to challenge those, particularly in the African-American community, that has stated that philanthropy has been on the wrong side of impacting the base African-American community. And what I mean by the base African-American community are the everyday sheroes and heroes in our community that are working anywhere from workforce development to reentry for ex-offenders to promoting affordable housing. So we thought, we saw it as an opportunity to challenge those that wanted to challenge philanthropy through the convening of dialogues through this on-the-table process, which is what we did today, and began to mutually put something out there that this is what we want to talk about, and this is how philanthropy can help us bring attention to the work that we're doing that's not being given to our issue.
All three of you have been involved in on the tables today, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just sort of with your organizations, or in Daniel, in your case, jumping around. What's the feel? What are people talking about? What have you gleaned? What have you learned from sort of dipping into the conversations that you've sort of been around?
Yeah. So we curated a couple different conversations last night and tonight, specifically with young people aged 18 to 25 who are experiencing homelessness or a housing crisis. And this year's thing we did focus on, and the trust gave us some really great guidelines and media to use. We focused on this theme of social inclusion. Mm-hmm. And so we asked young people, what does it mean, right? And they brainstormed, they came up with ideas, and they voiced, these are the challenges that I feel as a young person having a housing crisis in Chicago today. This is what I experience. This is what I see. And then we encourage, well, what's next, right? What do you think are the solutions? What are things that other people can be doing? Obviously, they know us as a partner in the organization, and the staff members that are there care about them. But we said, what can you do? How do you see yourself as an active participant? And we heard young people say things like, we can actually vote. Yes, a lot of us were not interested in sort of the same thing, but now as a result of what just happened, we're actually interested in learning about this. They said, we can include others. We can find ways to break down segregation. I mean, they were talking about segregation in this city. We had one young person say, I've walked down the street with identifying as African American, and he was with a white youth, and he said, we're treated differently when we walk into the same store, and yet I know in my heart we come from the same place and we're going to sleep at the same shelter tonight, right? Yeah. So they're voicing and trying to articulate solutions that they can project forward both for themselves and for others to get engaged with.
Sol Flores is the executive director of La Casa Norte. Otis Monroe, the CEO of the Monroe Foundation. Daniel Ash, the chief marketing officer at Chicago Community Trust. On the Table 2017 is the hashtag. We're doing our own On the Table tonight. We'll take a break and we'll start up. I really want to ask you guys, you know, what can we do just in this room? What can we do to make Chicago a better place for all of us? Not just, you know, just for us, the four of us that are in this conversation, but what can be done as you guys, as the heads of some very important foundations and organizations in this town? What can we do to make Chicago a better place for all? That's the conversation we're going to have here on the Table 2017. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back, 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's the Big Table turned into On the Table tonight. Chicago Community Trust, as Daniel Ash told us, 5,800 different events and dinners and lunches and meetings today. Over 100,000 people reached. This is a big, big project for Chicago. It happens every year. This year, no different. On the Table 2017 is the hashtag on social media. In studio with me tonight, Daniel Ash. He's the chief marketing officer for the Chicago Community Trust, who puts on the Table. Sol Flores is the executive director of La Casa Norte. And Otis Monroe is the CEO of the Monroe Foundation. All right, so let's get into this. Let's get into our On the Table. I apologize, there's no food. That's my first mistake. I have some trail mix on my desk if you go there. But all right, so let's get into it. Let me start. I kind of set up the question, which is, how can we make Chicago a better place for everyone, for all? Otis, why don't we start with you? What do you think the biggest issue is that is affecting Chicago right now?
Well, we are working with a group of youth called Packing Power, people organizing and winning everything right. And there are youth who are gang involved or on the fringes of becoming gang involved, 16 to 24 years of age, from across the city, Inglewood, Roseland, the Austin community, supported by the Chicago Community Trust. And we just spent 8 weeks training them on how to become engaged and civically in changing their conditions. And one of the outcomes is that the best anti-violence program is a job. Now, you know, you have groups that's having studies after study, the study of the study of why black kids and Latino kids are gang involved and this and that, all that other kind of nonsense. And our youth, their position is, we're tired of being studied. We just need a job. Otherwise, if I can't find work, then I have no choice but to be on what we call right. the grind.
We just had Bridget Gaynor on, the Cook County Commissioner, talking about summer jobs for teens. One of the questions I ask her, I'll ask you too. I mean, what about this concept of, yeah, you can have jobs available and the private sector can create summer jobs for teens, but how do you get them to actually want them?
I know Commissioner Gaynor, and she's an admirable elected official. But at the end of the day, sometimes these government-led initiatives still have limitations. They have a set criteria who can be involved. And then our initiative, what makes our initiative that the Chicago Community Trust supports, and they're having an on-the-table dialogue this evening, is that it has no restrictions. So if you're a young person that has a felony class conviction, and you want to create employment opportunities for yourself, that's really what we're leading this toward,
right.
is that their initiative is going to create a pop-up retail operation that allows them to sell apparel that they have created logos for that we're going to launch this June in Inglewood,
okay.
so that now they can take their natural gifts and abilities, brand them on caps and hoodies and T-shirts and sweatpants, and sell them in an outdoor pop-up retail operation on 63rd and Halston, right across from the recently opened Inglewood Square, move over to Chatham, move over to Wicker Park, so they have variety of geography and variety of opportunity. But the point being, it's self-led.
They take ownership in the job, yeah, right.
So the conversation that we need to have that the Chicago Community Trust gets is that, and that the conversation that we, the Monroe Foundation, want to have with others in philanthropy is, let's talk about how to invest and seed these non-traditional approaches to creating economic opportunity for young people, not just fund the study, but fund the response and the innovative response. And I think this youth-led entrepreneurial initiative, started off as Packing Power to now it's called Youth Boom.
So not only jobs, but the idea of taking pride and entrepreneurship and the idea of really sort of
absolutely
digging in.
Listen, I believe that, and the young people have said this, and I know just from my own experiences as a young youth in Inglewood and Roseland community growing up, we can have peace circles and conversations all day long, but I feel real good about myself when I got legitimate money in my pocket. I feel real good when I got some real money in my pocket. I can't eat a study.
All right.
Justin, what I think you're getting to, and Otis, that's fantastic, I think, to build on it, is how are we as a city preparing young people from their whole selves?
Right, right.
So clearly economic independence and economic opportunity is first and foremost, right, when they're ready to work. Right. I would take that a step back and say education, right? I mean, we still have a long ways to go in the city to make sure that every child participating in Chicago public schools has access. Equity, really preparing them. And then let's take a step back from there and think about early childhood education, right? And how are we making sure when comes out of the womb, right, a Chicagoan being born here is prepared best to learn and to participate. So I think as a city, what we can do better is making sure we're looking at all elements of a young person's experience being here, right, and making sure we're addressing. Now, I work for an organization, La Casa Norte, and we're very focused on serving the most vulnerable, right? So that those sort of class of young people who've been thrown away, kicked away, sort of shunned, those that we'd like to ignore, those that get weeded out of other programs, they fail mm-hmm. out of other things because they don't meet a threshold, because they can't show up on time, they can't meet those certain eligibility. Our approach is there's no wrong door, right? You can come in, where you get in where you fit in, and my job, right, like the reason why I am there and want to be there, now everyone's community house, is to serve those and to work in partnership with them so that they have the life of their dreams.
Is it harder to do that job in 2017 than, say, a decade ago or 20 years ago? I mean, we hear in the news all the time about social service agencies being depleted, the fact that there's no state budget, the funding has changed. We've seen even, you know, economists and people who study government saying the future of government's going to be private sector. We're not going to have governments funding social service agencies, people who want to help youth homelessness. You're going to have to figure it out on your own. Is it harder to do that job now than, say, 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, I've been in the sector for 14 years. I definitely think that it's become more difficult, certainly with the recent state budget debacle. I mean, here's the thing, Justin. Private sector can't just ignore an entire swath and population of people, right? There's an opportunity to invest and create an intervention now, like for the young people that Otis was talking about, so that 10 years from now, they're actually participating in a positive way in our local economy. All of the young people that we're talking about have talents, have opportunity, have the desire. When you said, you know, how do we get them to want a job? All those summer jobs are taken. There's like five youth for every single one of those, those jobs. I don't meet a young person or someone who ever walks into any of our shelters or housing programs that says, this is the best that I can do. This is the most that I want for my life. So I think it behooves private sector, and I think private sector gets it, like examples in working with philanthropic partners like the Trust or all the, you know, hundreds of thousands of volunteers that we have here in Chicago want to find a way to get involved and do something.
Soul Flores, Otis Monroe, Daniel Ash, we'll, let's take a quick break so we get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll continue this conversation because it is really interesting that we have – I mean, we had the conversation about youth jobs with Commissioner Gaynor in the 7:30, which was unrelated, but I see it's interconnected. And jobs and education, what we heard, we'll hear from Daniel as well as what he thinks about the pressing issues of today in Chicago. And we'll continue the conversation, hashtag on the table 2017, here on The Download. Stay with us. All right. Thanks, Rob. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We are having a great conversation. On the Table 2017, the fourth annual On the Table forum has been all day, 5,800 different events, 100,000 people reached. It's put on by the Chicago Community Trust. Daniel Ash is here, Chief Marketing Officer for the Trust. Also, Sol Flores, she's an Executive Director for La Casa Norte, and Otis Monroe, CEO of the Monroe Foundation. We're having a conversation about Chicago. What's standing in the way of this being the best city for everybody? That's really the conversation. We've heard from Otis and Sol. Let's continue with Daniel. Daniel, what in your estimation, what is the biggest issue? What should we be prioritizing as a city that we need to fix?
Well, here's what I heard today, and I've heard this consistently over the past few years. You have residents of Chicago sort of saying something that we heard nationally during elections. Like the residents are saying that we're not seen when we're not heard. And there's this, I think, strong belief, and I think it's a valid belief, that our city will be stronger if I have an opportunity to participate more. So I heard that across the board. It didn't matter sort of race, it didn't matter age, is this notion of see me, I'm here, I exist, and I want to participate. And I want to participate in meaningful ways. Two, I actually think to make our city the best city they can be, you hear residents saying and that we need to be sort of radically creative in our approach.
Make no small plans.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, our city was built with that type of boldness, right? And I think residents want to go back to that. And let me give you an example. And I know this may actually sound shocking to some listeners, but this afternoon I'm with a group of sort of worker organizers. These are folks who work with the unions, and we're talking all unions, from folks who work in the hotels to tradesmen, et cetera. And a conversation sort of landed on this idea of police relationships with community. And you have a young man who says, you know, I was visiting Scotland, and I was blown away by the fact that officers who patrol community do not carry firearms. They're disarmed. And for him, it was a young man. This is a young man. He was like shocked that you could have a police force that was serving the community but disarmed. And so the question posed to the group was, well, if we really want to change the dynamic at the neighborhood level with police and community, you know, would we consider something like that? Now, again, in this country, you may think, well, that's absolutely ridiculous.
Right. But I mean, you don't even know where you'd start on that.
Yeah, right? Well, how would you start? But these are residents who are saying, well, maybe that is possible. Because if we really want police to serve and we want there to be this sense of trust, we have to sort of level the playing field. We have to sort of create space where people don't feel threatened.
Right.
And how do you do that? So that's the type of, ludicrous on one hand, but...
But like you said, make no small plans.
Exactly.
Right?
It's like, can we reimagine the set of possibilities?
I guess, it feels like everybody weighing in, whether it's jobs, education, or just the idea of being creative. I mean, there is this idea of reimagining, of what the system is right now. And you hear it on both sides of the aisle. When you talk about political persuasions, you'll hear from the right and the left, liberals, conservatives, all say the system is broken. They may have different reasons on why it is, but that always, there's this concept of what we're doing right now. I think of education as a great example. You'll hear from both sides saying what we're doing right now with public education is broken. We need to figure out a new way to do education. Now, there are vastly different opinions on what to do with that. But there is at least a consensus that there needs to be a reimagining of some of the things that we count on as a society. Do you agree with that, Otis?
I agree with that. But, I've been an advocate and organizer for 40 years. I started off as a kid in Woodlawn. And I hear everybody's got a perspective. But at the end of the day, my educational pursuits were rooted in what my grandparents required us all to do. So at the end of the day, it does. There's an element of this that's old school. For us, 40 years ago, you had black, the black community, not going to speak to what I know, the black community, it meant something to get an education, make a life for yourself, take care of your parents, take care of your grandparents. Now what you have today, this whole concept of the village, it takes a village to raise a child. That ain't going to happen. The villagers are too young. You got grandparents in their 30s now. They themselves did not have any educational pursuits or dropped out. So we could talk about funding formulas, can't rely on the tax base. That's above my pay grade, and I'm a pretty smart man. But at the end of the day, there has to be some, we have to find a way to bring back some personal resolve that in spite of everything around me, in spite of all the abandonment, drug selling, this and that, I'm going to stay in school. I'm going to pursue something. I'm not going to hang with this crowd here.
A little personal responsibility.
And I don't know how that happens, but it goes back to basics.
Yeah, it does go back to basics. But residents are saying, I have the willpower, and I want to help create willpower in others. But they're also saying, the system should be on my side. The system should not be aimed at me or aimed against me or positioned against me. So it's two sides of this.
Yeah.
Every individual in this country has some responsibility, and that responsibility has to be nurtured, has to be encouraged. And when you fail to sort of meet that promise of that nurturing,
right,
which is rooted in love, right, then as a society, we have to make up for it. And I think that's where we have to overinvest. Again, the folks that I heard today, and every year we do this, I'm hearing this. I want to do my part, but every other stakeholder, institutional, individual, needs to do their part as well. And when we talk about our most challenged communities, and this is where this work to me really makes sense, our most challenged communities, it requires an additional investment of person power, of financial power, to, again, make up for neglect. This idea of see me, I've been here, is rooted in this idea that I've been unseen and neglected.
And
you just don't magically snap your fingers and have folks ready to enter the job market.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily also an 11-month intervention program that's going to solve a young person's experience who's been part of a system and been mistrusted and misabused by a system for many, many years as well. Exactly. You know, Justin, one thing I just wanted to go back to that came up a little bit, which was like, how can others get involved in what you're hearing about residents? You know, we work with about 1,500 volunteers a year. You know, we were talking at the break about, you know, sort of local businesses here in Chicago and how are they getting involved. Well, here's the thing. Those businesses are made up of people, right? And so we get emails all the time, requests from, you know, everyday kind of, not the CEO necessarily, but folks just saying, what can I do? I Googled, I want to do something with my kid on the weekends, or my small staff team want to get involved. And like, we're not smart enough, or we, you know, we can't fix policy and we can't go build 10 homes for you tomorrow, but what can we do? What can five smart people who have some expendable resources do on a Saturday afternoon, right?
Yeah, what can you do to be heard, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think I had a great conversation with Chicago Cares. They were on a couple weeks ago, and we took the premise of, what if you took volunteerism and treated it like the military draft, that you had to volunteer? I know that's hilarious, the idea that it's mandatory volunteering. It's an oxymoron. But the idea that, what if volunteerism in this country was mandatory and you had to have service, not unlike you did to the military or social service? What kind of world would that be? What would we use that power for? What would we see in our cities, in our areas, in our rural areas, that would be different than what we see today?
I love the idea of service, and I think community service should be natural. Like, if you really are going to be a civic actor in your community at any level, it begins with service. Here's what I hear sort of through our networks at the Trust, particularly among younger residents. They want to serve, and they want to sort of be charitable, but they also want to solve problems at the sort of root cause level. Mm-hmm. So I think the more service that you sort of advocate for, mandate, you're going to even see a deeper interest in, like, why are we having to be so charitable? Why do we have to?
Yes.
What's causing these problems, right?
Yeah.
And again, particularly with the younger donors, right, that we engage, they're saying, yeah, I want to go and get the coats at wintertime, and I want to do those things. But why can't we afford the books at the school system, right? Why do I have to donate? And so this is where system change sort of comes in. Again, so I agree with this point. Folks want to participate. They want to get engaged. On the folks who are sort of at the resident level in communities that are dealing with sort of hardship, they're saying, meet needs that I express. They say, see me, engage me. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I want to make sure that's really clear, is that I heard this today. We don't need thousands of folks parachuting our community and being paternalistic.
Right.
We want relationships, right? We want to share power. We don't want it to be sort of worked on. We don't want to be studied.
Yeah.
So we do have to, there's a balance there. But I think, the more involvement you see in public life, I think the deeper relationships are going to form. And I actually think you're going to see coalition building that is aimed at, again, these tough, seemingly intractable problems. Right? So again, service in partnership with others, strangers not becoming strangers, but becoming in relation with one another, leads to the type of coalitions that will allow the city to advance.
Let me ask you this as we kind of wrap up here. You know, I think about what's happening in Washington when you talk about partisan politics, and not only that, but when you go into the country, that there's a deep divide between the political beliefs of one side versus the other. Mm-hmm. When you think of the city of Chicago and even the Chicago area, it's similar. It may not be divided down political lines, but it might be social lines, which is the most segregated city in America, that people don't necessarily listen or want to understand anything about the other communities that might just be across the river, or, you know, just a stone's throw from where they live. I mean, there's a tribal style here in Chicago where people keep to themselves. What can you do to change that? What do we have to do to change that, to essentially listen to each other in this town, to make this a better city and a better Chicago region for all? Otis?
Well, I think everything begins with dialogue. One of the initiatives that, with Packing Power with the youth, we just didn't reach out among just African-American youth that are involved in the grind, if you will, and I keep using that colloquialism. I want to keep it 100. But we reached out to Arab-American youth and young adults and Muslim youth and young adults, because the perspective of the kids is that something kind of soul just said about being homeless. At the end of the day, you're profiling me this, but at the end of the day, we're all going to the same shelter. So why are we fighting each other? Well, the same thing with the perspective of the youth. You're Muslim, Arab, I'm African American, you're an immigrant. But at the end of the day, each of us are being profiled or pitted against one another when we should be combining ourselves to form a collective strength of advocacy, which makes it harder for society at large, right, to pit one ethnic group against the other. And that's what we call it, packing power.
So, I mean, that there is, I hear in that as well, the same concept that Daniel brought up about being hurt. Mm-hmm. This concept of, you know, are we hearing each other?
Yeah, and I think obviously clearly on the table, like what it's been doing for the last 4 years, is critical to doing that. You know, I think one of the things that's important is our approach, though. And so how are we listening? And are we doing that with grace and forgiveness, right? I have folks all the time who want to talk about issues of poverty and homelessness, and they feel embarrassed or ashamed to ask certain questions. Or they feel like, oh, I'm not prepared with that type of background. And so how I can be graceful in their asking questions or in listening for them, so they can ask whatever they need to ask to get the information that they need, and that closes the gap between us and them. So I think it's dialogue, but it's a way that you engage. And the second that you can do that, something opens up.
Daniel?
I love the phrase Sol used, sort of listening with grace. As you know this, Justin, that this all started with an exploration of philanthropy, right? And I actually think to be graceful, you have to come with a loving spirit. And I know that sounds touchy-feely. I know it sounds very sort of high-minded. But I feel that residents are saying that we want to have opportunities to build relationships, to develop that type of empathy. And we want to bring that type of loving spirit of ourselves, our household, of our city, of our community. We want to bring all of that to the table, right? And if you bring it all to the table, you're going to be in a space where you can hear. And if you can hear and you can see someone, you can then build that relationship that leads to meaningful actions, right? So some of those actions will be, like, we need you on this Saturday to help clean up this park. Some of it's going to be, we're going to need you to join us in this march downtown. We're going to need you to sign a petition.
We're going to need you to hear.
We're going
to
need
listen.
You. Yeah, but all
of
that.
Have consciousness.
Right. Have consciousness, right? But all of those actions start with that, to me, begin with relationship. Mm-hmm. And relationship, in order for it to form, like, you have to bring that loving spirit. And that's what philanthropy ultimately is all about, right? Love of other human beings. And again, we're trying as an institution to get back to that. Yeah. So we're not studying, but we're engaging.
Should we end with a group hug? Should that what we do? Is that how On the Table ends?
Well, I mean, we ended with a hug.
All right, well, we'll do that.
And I just want to give a shout out on air. I said this during the break, that I want to personally thank the Chicago Community Trust, which has really taken an extraordinary leadership role. Terry Mazzani, the board of directors, and Mr. Mazzani is retiring, but has taken... The Chicago Community Trust listened and continues to listen. So it's on the table that becomes continued dialogue off the table. And I just want to publicly on the air recognize the leadership role that the Chicago Community Trust has taken in this initiative.
Otis Monroe is the CEO of the Monroe Foundation. Sol Flores was going to say the exact same thing, I'm sure. The executive director of La Casa Norte. And Daniel Ash, the chief marketing officer for the Chicago Community Trust. On the Table 2017 is the hashtag. They're happening all over Chicago. Tonight, as we speak, people are getting together having similar conversations. Thank you all for coming to the WGN On the Table
Thank
tonight.
You.
We appreciate you being here. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thank you.